We're on Daf Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, Kinyan Lev, and we were speaking yesterday about a woman at childbirth is in a dangerous situation, and the heavenly courts are opening up the books in judgment and seeing, you know, maybe she's guilty of certain sins, especially three specific sins that we isolated. But what about a man? The Gavra Hechi Mivdike. So let's see if we can find that on the daf. We are on the top of Lamed Beis, and you know the Tzuris HaDaf that I have is kind of like an L shaped, and you have the thinner lines and then the wider lines, and in the wider lines, if we count down two lines, the first word of the line is Mivdike. So Omrei Shlokish, Bishosha Ovrim Ala Gesher. In those days, especially, a bridge was very dangerous. And it put a person who crossed the bridge into a somewhat of a danger, precarious situation, and that's when the judgment is going on up on high. And apparently the weight on the bridge could possibly collapse, you know, the bridge might collapse. So the Gemara asks, Gesher Vesu Lo? I mean, is that the only situation in which a person is in danger when he crests over a bridge? Ema Ke'en Gesher. You know, the Reish Lakish didn't mean to reduce it just to this one specific scenario, but this is a prototype of any kind of moment of danger. Like, for example, the Gemara often talks about a kir natui, right? That there's a dilapidated house, and it's one of the walls is already inclined towards falling. So you don't walk under that wall because that's very dangerous. Amar came to me. Rav lo avar b'mabra. The Yosef Bey Ove Kochavim. Mabra is a ship or a raft, and Rav would not take a trip across the river in a raft that was piloted by a guy. Omar, he was afraid for Dilma Mifkadele Dina Ale. I really think this Gemara has relevance to us today, in our current situation that we're facing. In other words, it could be that this guy is guilty and he'll be judged at that moment of danger when you go across the river. Umitfesino ba'day. And maybe as a result, if the ship, you know, goes down into the sea, I'll die as well. I'm putting myself into a special danger. And this is the principle of Kevin Shenitna Rishus L'Mashkis Eino Mavchin Bein Tzadik L'Rosha. That once the Mashkis has the green light and he can take this ship all the way down to the bottom of the river, and even though he got that green light because of this idol worship, but nevertheless anyone on the boat would be in danger, Chas Shalom, of losing his life. So Rav would therefore avoid going across this river with a guy. Now the Gemara used the term Ovi Kochavim. It could be that in this context we should take the Gemara literally, that we're talking about an idol worshiper. Shmuel lo avar al b'mabra de ispe Ovi Kochavim. Shmuel came to the opposite conclusion, that only if there's a guy in the boat, then he would go with this boat. Omar, he declared, Sonta Betray Ume Lo Sholit. So again, you have to know more about the spooks over here, but the Satan could not judge two nations at the same time. You know, this might be a reflection of what Rashi says in Chumash with regard to the three Malachim that came to visit Avram Avinu. Why was it necessary to send three malachim? Because ein malach echad oseh shtei shlichuyos. And the Gemara Shmuel is applying that rule here, that every nation, if it's going to be judged or condemned and brought down because of the Malach, the Satan, then it's going to be a separate judgment for each nation. So it's really fascinating that Shmuel was, so to speak, I don't mean this literally, but figuratively holding on to the guy and saying, we represent two different nations. Now, I don't know what Shmuel would say if, let's say, an American would ask Shmuel, should I go on this river, on this boat, with a British person? You know, is that also considered Trey Ume? Or do we say they all belong to the same nation? What about a black person with a white person, a yellow person with a green person? You know, at what point would Shmuel say it's called Trey Ume? Rabbi Yanai Bodek V'Avar. Rabbi Yanai says, I'm just going to check out the boat, make sure that it has no cracks, there's nothing deficient, and then I'll go on the river. And he makes no qualms about it. You don't have to figure out who's is a guy, not a guy. Of course, I would assume that Rabbi Yanai would know how to check out a boat thoroughly. I don't know, you know, maybe he was an expert at checking out boats, and he would see whether or not there's room for concern. But you see there, Rav Yanai took more of a, what word could I use, more of a natural, derech ha-teva kind of approach here. You know, he's not making calculations about judgment this way and judgment that way, but rather about safety. You know, just check out the safety of this boat before you get on the boat. Yeah, I'm thinking to myself, do you remember the terrible tragedy in the Titanic? You remember? And I don't think any of us were alive at that time, but the Titanic, I think, hit a glacier, if I'm not mistaken. I don't think you would have found any faults in the boat. And this raises the whole question of statistical probabilities. You know, somebody asks, you know, maybe we should lower the speed limit from 70 miles an hour to 45 miles an hour. And probably as a result, you know, many people would survive. But there's something called nature. You know, we go according to the natural rules. So if you're on a boat, you know, you check out. I mean, I know people who don't want to fly by plane, even in the best times, because they think it's so fraught with danger. Maybe they knew someone who never died on a plane, you know, in a crash. So they're allergic to going on planes. My wife's aunt, that's my mother-in-law's sister, Tzolzayin Gesund, she came recently to Israel about 2 months ago, maybe 3 months ago. We had a whole party for her. It was the first time in her life she got on a plane. So the Gemara says, Rav Yanai litamei, the Omar, Rav Yanai made a comment, li'olam al yamod adam b'makom sakana, person should never endanger himself, lomar, and think, sha'osim lo nes, that God will do a miracle for him. Shema ein osim lo nes. You never can be guaranteed that God will perform a miracle for you. You know, I'm thinking in terms of those minyanim that went on. You know, people took a laid back attitude. Maybe they weren't aware of the severity of the danger or the, I don't know, I'm not sure, but it was not a great Kiddush Hashem. Then Rav Yanai says, and even if you'll get a miracle in Osim Lo Nes, that's not too good either, because Menachem Lo Mischuyosav. So in the ultimate Cheshbin, the calculation on high, if Hashem has to intervene and change nature supernaturally in order to save you, you're going to lose out as a result, because that's going to be already a payment for one of your good deeds or many of your merits, and you don't want to lose that in this world. So the bottom line is that according to Rav Yanai, we have to avoid putting ourselves in a makom sakon. So I have a cash on this from a story, which maybe you've heard, I don't know. You all heard, of course, of Rav Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld, Zichron Levracha. Now, he was a Moel, and there were riots in the eastern part of Jerusalem at that time. This is before, you know, this is before the state. And it was very dangerous to go through the Arab part of Jerusalem at that time. And he was called upon to serve as a Moel on a Shabbos in the Jewish quarter of the old city. And he had two possibilities how to get there, how to walk. And he walked through the marketplace of the Arabs. And Baruch Hashem, he survived it, and he actually implemented the Mila. But later on, there was a whole Taram. Why did Reb Chaim Sonnenfeld do such a thing? And he said that if we don't go into the Arab quarter, then we are being mafkir that for the Arabs. We're giving up any claim to that part of Yerushalayim. Now, does that justify putting yourself into a makom sakana? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. I'm just telling you a story. I think the story is written up by Rav Tukachinsky, which is a pretty reliable source. Amar Rav Chanin, Mikra, where is there a pasuk that indicates that you should not put yourself into danger? And the Gemara quotes a pasuk in Bereishis by Yaakov Avinu. And Yaakov, when he was about to approach Esav, he turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says, Katonti mikola chasadim mikola emes. So you see that Yaakov Avinu is crying out for divine intervention in order to save him from Esav. And Yaakov was absolutely overwhelmed by fear of Esav. He didn't say to himself, well, you know, I'm the good guy, and I have many merits, excuse me, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will intervene and save me. He was concerned about danger. So even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu is good to us, and certainly in the case of Yaakov, who, upon whom God had bestowed so many different benevolent gifts, but nevertheless, divine protection is a questionable thing. You don't know if God is going to intervene, so you got to avoid any situation that's naturally dangerous. Rabbi Zera Biyoma Deshusa, okay, this has to do with, I think, with spooks, I'm not sure. This is a day of south winds. It seems that the south wind has a particular power. Is lo nafik lebeinei dikla. He would not find himself between the palm trees, because the wind could cause the tree to fall on him. That's like what I discussed before about a kir natui. But it could be that the south wind, I don't know, you have to ask the meteorologist, you can Google this, is more powerful and really causes trees to fall. So in such a case, you don't want to be amongst the trees. A person should always ask Hashem that he should not come down with illness. Shem yechle, omrim lo, haveiz chus v'ipote. It's not going to be so easy once you become ill. I don't think he means he has a cold, but he's going to have to come forward in front of the heavenly tribunal with zchuyot. And if he doesn't have merits, then at that point, once he's a chola, it's like a person who's in a dangerous situation. It's not a good place to be. Omar Mar Ukva, Mikra, and Mar Ukva wants to bring a support text from a pasuk at the end of Chumash, and there it says, "Ki pol hanofel mimenu." Very strange pasuk. Yipol anofel. And then it says mimenu. So he says mimenu lahavi rayach. It's interesting. He's using terminology that we apply in Choshe Mishpat. That, you know, if you want to extract money from someone, you know, you want to gain something, then the burden of proof is on you. And here also, you know, if you're in a situation of ki yipol hanofel, and you're on the way down, then you better have a good proof in your back pocket that you're worthy to some sort of supernatural protection. Tana d'bei Rabbi Yishmael ki yipol hanofel mimenu. What is this double language of ki yipol hanofel? Roy zel lipol misheshes yimei abreshes. That the truth is that already at the beginning of creation, this person was meant to die. Roy zel lipol misheshes yimei abreshes. Apparently, I mean, this is a kasha on Yediyah and Bechira, but since HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows everything, including God knows that He's going to do a sin, so it's already predestined that He will die for His sins. Sharei lo nofal, vakosiv kro nofel. Notice, it's interesting. It says ki yipol, which sounds like he's already fallen, but then it says hanofel, which means adayin lo nofal. So he's a nofel. Or maybe I should say it the other way around. The word nofel indicates that he's already fallen, but ki yipol is in the future. In any way, there seems to be a stira between the two words of ki yipol and hanofel. So how do we reconcile that? Says Rabbi Yishmael, Ella shemegalgalin zchus al yidei zakai v'chova al yidei chayav. Which means the following. The parsha is talking about a makeh. And the Torah admonishes us to put up a fence on a roof so that no one would fall. Now, according to Rabbi Yishmael, the person who falls is called ki yipol hanofel, which means that it was already predetermined that he would fall and he would die. And yet, the pasuk says ki yipol. In other words, hanofel means it was already predetermined that he would die. But yet, the pasuk says ki yipol, which implies that he really shouldn't die. So the answer is, who was the one who brought about this situation? Is it the owner of the roof, and he's responsible for the death of this person who fell off the roof because he left his roof unfenced? And that's called Megalgalin Chova Al Yidei Chayov. That apparently the one who was responsible for the death of the falling person, he is considered guilty, and he's a chayav. That's called megalgalin chayav al yidei chov al yidei chayav. Now I have a footnote here which I'm trying to read. I'm not sure if I could read this. And he says the following, makes two or three points. Point number one is that person who was actually the victim and died by falling off the roof, he would have died in any event. Hashem would have found another way of taking his life because it was already predetermined that he would die. However, why did he die in that particular way, falling off that particular roof? The answer is because of Megalgalin Chov Al Yidei Chayav. That the owner of the house is considered responsible because he didn't put up the fence around the roof. Then he quotes the Iyun Yaakov, And he says that the pasuk is teaching us the principle that harm is imparted through one who is guilty. Okay, that makes sense. But the Gemara goes a step further and says, "Megalgal in schus al yedei zakai." Where does that come in? He says that this is the converse of the main teaching of the Braisa. One would have thought that if he does fence his roof properly, he does not reap any reward for doing so. Because if only a person who is destined to die for his sins will fall, then if no one fell off his roof because he put up a fence, well, that could be because there was no one who deserved to die. So Bryson teaches us that even so, the person who erected the fence derives a reward, or deserves a reward, as if he saved the lives of those who without the fence would have been in danger. Again, it's a little bit of a sensitive issue, because whose life would have been in danger? Why is he getting credit for putting up the fence and saving someone's life that was in danger? I don't know that there were any lives that were in danger. There was no one who was destined to die. But in an imaginary sense, the Bryce is teaching us that he saved lives. Again, it's all imaginary, because it's very possible that even without the fence, there was no one who was going to die. No one deserved to die. But we can imagine that as a result of putting the fence up, he saved people from dying. And that's called Megalgal in Schus al Yedei Zakai. Tana Rabbanan. Mi Shechala V'Nata Lamus. If he's on his deathbed, is Omrim Lo Hisvado. We ask him to recite Vidui. Shekein Kol HaMumasim Misvadim. We have Halacha that applies to Misas Bezdin, that when a person is put to death by the Jewish courts, then the first thing we ask him is that he should recite Vidui. And here, even though he's not being put to death by a court, he's dying a natural death, he too needs Vidui, so that his Misa will be a Misa HaMechaperes. Again, I would recommend that they do this earlier than later, because, you know, if you wait too long, it's not going to be possible. On them Yotze Lashuk, person goes out to the Shuk, Yehei Doma B'Einov Kamisha Nimsar Lisradiot. Sradiot is an officer in the Roman court. And once he goes out in the Shuk, he's got to consider the possibility that he might, chas v'shalom, be killed by these officers or by their policemen, because the Shuk was a very dangerous place back in the day. People would meet each other in the Shuk. There was very often a brawl, a fight. You know, you did this and you owe me this and so forth and so on. And you never know in such a brawl if you might get hit over the head, you get clobbered. I remember when I visited the museum in Amsterdam. I don't know if you have any interest in art. So one of the famous genre popular scenes is a brawl in the middle of a shuk of a marketplace. And I suppose you'll see it also in the old westerns, you know, those movies from the cowboy days. Also, you'll see all sorts of fights in taverns and in marketplaces. So therefore, the Braisa recommends that you take whatever care you can in these locations. It's a very dangerous kind of thing. Chash berosho, if a person has a headache, Yehi doma b'einav kemishin asnuhu b'kolar. Unbelievable. You know, I would say that this brisa on a psychological level is very problematic. You know, as soon as you get a headache, you already have to begin to think that maybe you're standing trial, you know, up in the heavenly courts. The Mishnah snu v'kolar. I mean, kolar means they've already chained him up. Olam mitov v'nafal. He's so sick that he falls on his bed. Right, for such a person, we would allow him to take medicine on Shabbos. He's already lying in bed with a fever. Is he a dom v'enov kamisha elua legardom lidon? He's about to be executed. Shekola olam legardon nidon. He says the following, that every person is really vulnerable because of his sins to all the dangers that lurk because the judgment is against him. But only im yeshlo praklitin gedolim nitzol. He'll only be saved if he has a great defense attorney up in Shamayim. And they can find zchuyot. V'im lav eino nitzol. He's in a dangerous, precarious situation. Even at the moment that he takes ill, if he has no defense attorneys, no advocates, no zchuyot, merits. V'eluhem praklitin shel adam, and what could advocate on his behalf to save him from death? Tshuva u'maisim tovim. So the Braisa continues. Afilu teisha me'os v'tishim v'tisha melamdim olachova v'echad melamdim olavzchus nitzol shenemar. Even if 999 of the prosecuting attorneys are presenting your guilt up in Shamayim, but you have one malach, one angel up in Shamayim that is presenting your merits, that's enough to save you against the 999. Shenemar, and we have to derive this from a pasuk in Iov. Im yeshalav malach melitz, if he has one single angel to present his defense, to intercede on his behalf, even if it's echad mini elef, even if it's one out of 1,000, so the 999 are against him. Lahagid li adam yishro or yashro. And there's this one single defense angel who is presenting his yosher, you know, his righteous person. Vayichunenu. The pasuk says in Iov that Hashem will be gracious to him. We will pardon him. Vayomer. And he says, "P'da'eu meredesh shachas." And this angel who comes to defend the person says, "Please redeem him from descending down into the other place—not the good place, but the bad place." Rabbi Eliezer bino shel Rabbi Yosi Aglili Omer afilu teisha meos v'tisha v'tisha bioso malach lechova v'echad l'schus. Nitzol shenemar melitz echad mini olef. So in other words, if there's one angel and he gives a prosecution of 999 chova means a reason for guilt, but he gives one idea or one logical argument lizchus to indicate the merit of a person is nitzol, that's enough to save the person. So in other words, according to Rabbi Eliezer, when it says 1 out of 1,000, it's not just relating to one angel against 999, but even within one angel and all the merits and all the deficits that he puts forward, one merit is enough. Tanur Rabbanan, we learned in the Brayso al Shalosh, Averos, Nashim Mesos, Yoldos, at the time they give birth. Rabbi Loz Omer, Nashim Mesos, Yoldos. Now we're talking not about Bishas Misa, I'm sorry, Bishas Leda, which is called Yoldos, but rather Yolados. You dropped the Vav, and you're left with Yolados, which means we're talking about young people, Nevuch, that die, Rachmana Litzlan, for whatever reason, without any disease. Rabbi Acha Omer, Biavon, Shemechabsos, Tsoas, B'neim, B'shabs. Remember, both say, honestly, I don't know if you should take this Gemara literally. You know, I'm a shtickel darshan. My father was a darshan. I really think that this Gemara should be interpreted in a more symbolic way. But if you take it literally, it means that women violate the Shabbos. A mother will violate the Shabbos, chas v'shalom. Why? Because she's so eager to clean. They didn't have, disposable diapers. The mother is so eager to clean off the schmutz, you know, the tzoa, from the diapers of her children. She may be tempted to clean it off in a way that violates Meleches Melamed. And that's a violation of Shabbos. Again, I'm thinking out loud here that Alpidrush, I think what Rabbi Lezer, Rav Acha has in mind here, is sometimes a mother has such a love for a child that instead of castigating him for the child when the child is on the verge of rebellion, and putting him in and trying to educate him, instead she covers up for him. You know, she makes it seem that he's a tzaddik. You know, it's very hard for a mother to acknowledge that her son is gone off, you know, the wrong path. So she's in denial. The Yesh Omrim, what's the sin of women? Al Shekorim li Aron Kodesh Arna. They speak pejoratively about the Aron Kodesh in the shul. And they call it a chest. That's not a way we talk about it. A chest is a very good piece of furniture, but we're talking about the Aron HaKodesh that houses the Torah and replaces the Aron of the Shtei Luchos HaBris, of the Luchos HaEdus. And instead she calls it a chest. And the Gemara is going to tell us that not only women are guilty of this, but even Amaratzim, even men who are ignorant. Tanya Rabbi Shmuel ben Elazar Omer, Bavon Shnei Dvarim Amiaratzos Mesim, the ignorant people die. Al Shekorim Li Aron HaKodesh Arno, they too are Mezalzel in the covet of the Aron HaKodesh. They call it instead a chest, an Aron. The Al Shekorin Lebeis HaKnesses Beit HaAm. If you travel not far from here, you'll get to a place called Beit HaAm, which is a cultural center. Very nice. I once went there to hear Shuli Rand. You know, he gave a presentation. I don't know if you know who he is. Very funny. But you don't call a shul a Beit HaAm. You know, even though it is a Beit HaAm in a sense, I mean, we do many different things in a shul, and we gather together as a community. You know, our community center is really the Beit HaKnesset. I mean, the Gemara describes also things that used to take place in the Beit HaKnesset. They used to even return a lost object. You know, they would be machriz. Did anybody lose such an object in a Beit HaKnesset? The word Knesset means an assembly of Klal Yisrael. But we use it in a very specific way. And we don't use the term Beit HaAm to describe a Beit HaKnesset. I think I mentioned to you once that I became associated, maybe even friendly, with a Rav Shlomo Ranan Shlita. He has an organization which does work of Kiruv with Kibbutzim. And it's called what's the name of his organization? It's called Ayelet HaShachar. I don't know if you heard about it. They're bringing mamish shuls and sifrei Torah to kibbutzim that unfortunately were so vite, you know, so far from Yiddishkeit. And they're instilling in the people on kibbutzim an awe for a Beit HaKnesset. You know, it's a great accomplishment. Tanya, we learned in a braisa, Rab Yossi Omer, Shlosha Bidke Misa Nivru Beisha. Now, if you translate this literally, it's talking about an inspection or a bdika, but really it means a time of danger. And what it means is that there are three different areas of behavior that a woman is going to be checked out and investigated up in the heavenly courts on high at the time of a bedikas misa. Bedikas misa means when her life is in danger. And that specifically refers to leida. As I said yesterday, this is not the kind of sugya you want to learn with the lady folk, especially the young women. The Amri Lei, and others say Shlosha Divke Misa. So we're talking about a bond of death. Again, it's another phrase, but it's some sort of a cause of death. And what are the three great causes of death? You know, it's those transgressions or iniquities. They are Nida, V'chalav, Adloka, Saner. These are three special areas of responsibility of the women folk. They're in charge of the challah, the nida, and the ner Shabbos. And the Gemara says, Chada ki Rabbi Elazar v'chada ki Rabbanan. In other words, what's the difference between bidke misa and divke misa? And the answer is that it's totally in the machlokes between Rabbi Lazar and the Rabbanon. Now, we had a machlokes between Rabbi Lazar and Rabbanon earlier about the sins that cause death of a woman. At what moment in her life is she in a vulnerable situation? And one Tana says, that's the Rabbanon, they say that it's at the time of birth, of childbirth. But Rabbi Elazar was the one who said that yelados, that it's in general, you know, any kind of danger, even at an early age, even before she is old enough to give birth. So if you hold like the formulation of Amri Love, the second opinion, Shlosha Divke Misa, which we said were bonds of death, that would reflect the Shita Rabbi Elazar. And that could happen even at an early age. But if you go with the Tana Rabbi Yossi, who says Bidke Misa, then it means that her deeds are inspected at a special time of danger, which means when she's a yoledes. Tanya, we learned in a braisa, Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer, Hilchos Hegdesh Trumos Umasros Hein Gufe Torah. So the laws of Hegdesh, if you're magdish an animal, or Truma, if you're mafresh Truma, Maser, these are called Gufei Torah. They are fundamentals of the Torah. And here we turn to Daf Lamed Beis, Omed Beis. V'nimsaru li'ami ha'aretz. Even though they're so fundamental, but nevertheless, at the end of the day, who's in charge of these areas? It's going to be your rank and file person, your common folk. If you go and buy something, you buy it from not necessarily a Talmud Chacham, you buy it from an Amoritz. And he's going to be in charge of Afrosh's Trumas and Maestros. This is all before the Gzera of Demai. I mean, once there's a Gzera of Demai, we're no longer relying on the Amoritz. If I buy produce from an Amoretz, and I don't know that he's a Cheskas Chaver, I'm going to have to be Mafrish Masras. That's called Dmai. But in any event, the Gemara is talking about the scenario in which we have to trust the seller, and he's an Amoretz, and he's going to be relied upon for Trumos and Maisros, for Hegdesh. Tanya, we learned in the Braisa, Rabbi Nosson, Omer, Bavon Nidara Mesa, Isha Shel Adam. Person Nebuchadnezzar is going to lose his wife because of the Avera of Nidaran. So imagine a person takes a neder that he's going to be bringing a karbon, and he never actually brings the karbon. That's a violation of what's called Nidrei Hegdesh. And the punishment is Shenemar. The Pasuk says, Im ein lecha l'shalem, is lama yikach mishkovcha mitachtecha. If you have nothing to pay, in other words, you didn't live up to your obligation, then this is a rhetorical question, why should your bed be taken out from under you? And that's a symbolic allusion to his wife, and she was taken out. Rebbe Omer Bavon Nidarim Banim Meisim K'shem K'tanim. Nebuch, you could lose children because of this terrible violation that he doesn't live up to his pledge. Shenemar al titein es picha lachti es psarecha. Okay, let's see if we can translate that pasuk literally. I think it's a pasuk in Koheles, if I remember correctly. Do not allow your mouth to cause your flesh to sin. So we're talking about your mouth, and that's the neder that you took. And if you don't fulfill your vow or your pledge, then la'achti es psarech, the flesh of your skin, will cause la'achti. And that's your children. V'al tomar lifnei ha'malach kishkogahi. And don't think that you can convince the malach that what you did was a shogeg. Lama yikzof Elokim al kolecha, God is angry at your voice because you took a vow. V'chibel esmase yodecha, and he destroys your children, meaning the handiwork. Ezehein masi yodav shal adam, who could be considered the handiwork, or what is it? Havi omer banav ubnosav shal adam, his children. Tana rabbanan bavon nidarim banim esim. Divrei Rabbi Elezer Reb Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi Omer, Bavon Bittul Torah. So which sins bring about which calamities? So according to one school of thought, the calamity of losing a child, Nebuch, is caused by the sin of non-fulfillment of Nidarim. According to Rebbe, it's non-fulfillment of Torah. He was negligent in his Torah study. We derive that from the pasuk in Koheles. So Lamandi Omar Bavon Bittul Torah. Micro, which pasuk indicates that for neglecting Torah you Nebuch might have to bury your own children? Tichsiv, the pasuk says in Yirmiyahu HaNavi, it says, Lashav hikesi es b'nechem musar lo lakachu. The Gemara thinks that the word musar is a representation of Torah study. Because Torah is called musar avicha. It's called the rebuke of Torah, meaning the Torah tells you how to behave. Rab Nachmer Yitzchak Omar Leman Diomer Bavon Nidarim Nami Mehacha. Even if you hold that the terrible calamity of the loss of the children is as a result of the violation of Nidarim, nevertheless we could derive that conclusion from the same pasuk. Lashav hi kesi es b'neichem al iske shav. Now it's because you falsified your oath, your pledge, and you didn't live up to fulfill it, therefore Lashav hi kesi es b'neichem. Michti Rabbi Yehuda Anasi hainu Rebbe. So what's the difference between Rabbi Yehuda Anasi and Rebbe? They both seem to be saying the same thing. V'Rebbe bavon nidarm ka'amar. So Gemara answers, Basa d'shamei mer b'loz Reb Shimon, is that's when he repeated it, because he heard it over from Reb Elazar b'Reb Shimon. So what we're up to now, as we end for today, is Pligi bar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba of Rabbi Yossi. Again, the Gemara is analyzing which sins cause which kind of a terrible calamity and our punishment. And maybe the Gemara is trying to indicate that from the punishment you could learn how to do tshuva. You might be able to derive which sin you were.